Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in this morning for Teresa Tomeo here on Catholic Connection. Always a pleasure to sit in her host chair. And I was sitting in on Friday, if you recall, and talking to a couple guests, including Doug Keck from EWTN, and saying, you know, this decision from the Supreme Court could come down any minute now. And I didn't really realize that was really going to happen. Right after I got off the air and signed off, I get an email from a friend that the decision came down. And I'll never forget that, and I'm sure many of you are going to remember where you were when that decision came down. Very historic time, and we're doing kind of post-interviews here on Catholic Connection. Teresa had some great interviews on Monday when she was on live from Europe, and Sherry filled in yesterday, and so we're going to continue this conversation to keep people informed and abreast of what's really going on. Because now we know that it goes to the state level. Some states have abortion bans, or they have some kind of an abortion ban at some level. Some of them are in you have the heartbeat. Here in the state of Michigan, where I'm from, it is illegal to get an abortion, but we have an injunction right now in a 1931 law. So people are still having abortions in the state of Michigan. We're going to see how that's going to play out. But there's so much happening, and so we want to keep people informed of what's really going on and what this means to all of us. Claire Caldwell will be joining us here. She's an abortion survivor whose twin was killed in the womb. And she's here to share her story. She's also here to share her reaction to the Supreme Court decision on Dobbs. And she's also part of a new documentary by the Daily Wire called Choosing Death, The Legacy of Roe. And so we'll talk with her about that. I'll put the trailer on my communications evangelist coach, Vanessa Denha-Garmo, Facebook, and on my Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter, Vanessa Denha, on Twitter as well. And then I have a public Facebook page. You can find me there as well. I always share stuff on when I fill in for Teresa and on my own show, Epiphany, on there as well. And I put the trailer on there, so if you want to see it, it's kind of dark. It's really kind of difficult to even watch the trailer, but these are important stories to tell so we get the truth out there. And I talked about this on Friday with Doug Keck. You know, we're going into the 4th of July season, and these conversations are going to come up with your friends and family. I spoke about this last week, and we need to go into these conversations with love and charity, but well-informed. We have to know what we're talking about, and there's tons of information out there. We share a lot with you here on EWTN and on Catholic Radio. You can go to any of our platforms on EWTN and Catholic National Catholic Register, Catholic News Agency, and, you know, go to, there's a wealth of resources on these issues, especially when it comes to the issue of abortion and now post-Roe v. Wade, and now with the decision on the Dobbs case. What does this mean to all of us, and especially in our individual states? And so, you know, when you're having these conversations with your friends and family, you want to know exactly what the law states, what's going on. There might be something coming up in midterm elections in your state that could happen in the state of Michigan. They're gathering signatures right now to put this issue on the ballot in the midterm elections in November. So people in the state of Michigan need to know what's going on. We have one of the strongest abortion bans right now because of a 1931 law, but that could change. And they want to change the Michigan's constitution of what they're proposing here in the state of Michigan. So you have to know what's going on in your own state, and you have to go into these conversations with love and charity, but with truth. So do your research. EWTN shares a wealth of information, great articles, great information. We keep you abreast of what's happening as soon as the information comes down, and we'll share that information with you. Joan Lewis will be joining us here in the National Hour. Joan's Rome. She'll give us an update on the Papal Mass of the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, and we'll also talk about a new papal document on the liturgy with Joan that just came down today as well. So there's a wealth of information. Another thing that we need to keep in mind, you know, especially people who are have public platforms, right? You know, how do you, are you prepared for the post-Roe culture? And Teresa talked about this. She has this in her newsletter. You can sign up for her free newsletter at teresatamio.com, and she gives a wealth of information on the pro-life movement. And really informing priests and parishioners and others on with public platforms to defend life, these arguments. And we do a lot of media training together, T and I, and she's done media training for years. I've done media training for years. And it's really, she's a Catholic pro-life media expert. You know, Teresa understands media. She spent 20 years on the streets of Detroit where we met each other, street reporters. We're very careful when we say that. We say that people don't realize, what do you mean you met on the streets? We are street reporters, and that's how we became friends. And both of us have years of experience in the secular media. And, you know, we understand how to write messaging, you know, and how to create platforms, right? And how to share truth with other people. And so parishes and dioceses and ministries and companies and schools and colleges and campus leaders, you need to be properly trained when you're out there sharing information and knowing how to give interviews, especially now in the climate we're living in, the culture we're living in, this post Roe v. Wade culture. And I knew immediately when the decision was announced on Friday, I knew immediately it was going to get pretty ugly on social media alone, because it's not conducive to have constructive conversations. And I wrote about this in the National Catholic Register recently. Social media is not conducive. It doesn't lend itself to having critical conversations in a very constructive way, in a very healthy way. It's very combative, very divisive. And so when you're using social media platforms, you got to know how to position things properly, how to position things to inform and not incite anger, not to further divide. And I saw so much hate over the weekend and still with these ridiculous memes and posts, and so divisive. And we have to start with prayer. Ask the Holy Spirit to guide us. But if you have any kind of public platform, really discern and ask the Lord to guide you and how to share messages in a very, obviously to share facts and information and data and truth. But we're trying to win hearts over. We're not trying to win debates. We're not trying to win arguments. We're trying to win hearts over and share truth with people. And if you have a public platform, you have to think about your messaging. And how do you deliver your homilies? How do you deliver your talks? How do you talk to the media? How do you talk to your friends and family, especially when you have a large public platform, when you have a lot of people listening to what you have to say? How to position that message where it's informative, where it's engaging, where you're sharing facts and data, and you're not putting people on the defense. You're just sharing truth, and you're doing it in a very loving and charitable way. These are the things that we have to think about. We're out there talking about the issue of abortion, especially now as we move forward, and it's now on state level. So different states have different laws. So do your research, understand what's going on in your own state, and share truth with your friends and family. And hopefully these conversations at your pool parties and your barbecues this 4th of July weekend will be constructive, healthy, and informative, and not divisive. It is 8 minutes past the hour. I'm Vanessa Denhagarmo filling in for my dear friend Teresa Tamio this morning, and now it's time to head to the news. So looking at the weather around the country, there is some storms heading around in different parts of the country. In Seattle, 67 degrees is the high expected today. Mostly cloudy sky. Sacramento, California, high of 92. LA, a high of 84. Albuquerque, New Mexico, a high of 87. In Dallas, a high of 94. In Baton Rouge, a high of 88. St. Louis, 92. Green Bay, 78. In Michigan, here in the Detroit area, 88 is the high. In Boston, 83. Raleigh, thunderstorms are expected in Raleigh, North Carolina, 83. Atlanta, Georgia, some storms are expected, a high of 82 degrees. Storms in Tampa, Florida are expected of a high of 94 degrees. A new report on a national telephone and online survey finds that 50% of likely U.S. voters approve the Supreme Court abortion ruling, including 38% who strongly approve of the decision, which means that each state can now determine its own laws regarding abortion. 45% disapprove the Supreme Court's new ruling, including 38% who strongly disapprove. A new proposed bill would eliminate South Carolina's fetal heartbeat bill with even stricter laws surrounding abortion. We get more details from Rebecca Hughes.
Two state lawmakers introduced a new bill to fully outlaw abortions and allow civil penalties in South Carolina. State Senators Richard Cash and Rex Rice want to make all abortions illegal without exemptions from criminal penalties in cases of incest or rape, according to WSOC-TV. The proposed measure would also make it unlawful to help someone have an abortion and make it illegal to take a pregnant minor who lives in South Carolina to another state to have an abortion. The bill must pass the Senate and House before heading to the governor's desk. I'm Rebecca Hughes.
President Biden is unveiling a significant increase in U.S. forces in Europe. Speaking in Madrid at the two-day NATO summit, Biden revealed new military installations, troop movements, and equipment shipments. Biden said the United States and our allies are stepping up and proving that NATO is needed now more than ever. The president said a permanent headquarters for the 5th Army Corps in Poland will be established. Plans also call for an additional rotational brigade of 3,000 troops in Romania and additional air defense being stationed in Germany and Italy. Two Mexican men are facing charges after at least 51 migrants died inside a truck that was abandoned in a Texas heat wave. Mark Mayfield has the story.
State officials said most of the 39 men and 12 women found in the semi-trailer in an industrial area on the outskirts of San Antonio were Mexican citizens. Authorities described stacks of bodies inside the tractor trailer and others, some hot to the touch, had collapsed nearby. Immigration and Customs Enforcement called the scale of the tragedy unprecedented in the loss of life.
Around 700 firefighters will be going to work this morning trying to get a line around a growing wildfire in Northern California's Gold Country. Chief Brian Estes with Cal Fire says conditions look to be more favorable fighting the Rice's fires.
We will see some slight humidity recovery, and that'll be, you know, really critical to our suppression efforts. And our temperatures will obviously go down.
The fire is burning in Nevada County, about 75 miles northeast of Sacramento. The fire started around 2 p.m. Tuesday, quickly grew past 500 acres, and is uncontained at this time. Fire officials say the fire is threatening 500 buildings and more than 350 homes have been evacuated. A storm system near the Caribbean could become the season's first hurricane. Several tropical storm warnings and watches are in effect for the region. So far, the system hasn't become organized enough yet to be called a tropical storm. That's expected to change later in the weeks as forecasters believe the system could intensify as it moves into the southwestern Caribbean Sea. The personal information of thousands of California's gun owners might be in the hands of hackers after a data breach, Daniel Martindale explained.
California Attorney General Rob Bonta recently launched a website designed to improve transparency about guns, but the Fresno County Sheriff's Office says hackers found a way into it and mined the personal information belonging to residents with concealed carry weapon permits. Information that was exposed between Monday night and Tuesday morning includes names, addresses, birth dates, and occupations. The website remains disabled. The state attorney general's office says it's investigating.
It looks like the Republican nomination for governor of New York will not go to Andrew Giuliani, the son of former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. He's just conceded and called on supporters to fully back the winner of today's primary, Representative Lee Zeldin.
Are we ready to fire Kathy Hochul? This November, in the state of New York, one-party rule will end. Kathy Hochul will get fired.
AAA says Friday, July 1st, will be the busiest day at airports this year. There are growing concerns for travelers overreaching their destinations with delays and cancellations soaring. The perfect storm of staffing shortages, bad weather, and high demand makes planning ahead a must. To be best, avoid the chaos. Experts recommend trying to travel on off-peak days, packing less, and adding flight disruption protection when you book. Saturday the 2nd and Monday the 4th will be the least congested around Independence Day. U.S. airports just saw their busiest travel day so far this year with 2.5 million passengers on Sunday. Gas and oil prices are heading in the right direction finally, but the reasons why might be no cause for celebration. According to AAA, the drop in oil and gasoline futures prices stemmed from traders' concerns about an overall drop in U.S. economic activity following the Federal Reserve Board's 0.75 percentage point increase in benchmark interest rates on June 15th, the most aggressive hike since 1994. While the Fed's action was intended to curb inflation, economic analysts say it would slow economic activity by making it more expensive for businesses to borrow money, but buy machinery and purchase commodities used in manufacturing. That in turn will cause them to slow hiring or even lay off workers, which would reduce discretionary income. It is 15 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for Teresa Tamio. We'll be right back after the break.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling, 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
Do you wish you could have discussions about difficult topics with your adult children? If so, don't worry. You're not alone. Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck.
And I'm Lisa Popcheck, and our new book, Having Meaningful, Sometimes Difficult Conversations with Your Adult Sons and Daughters, can help you draw closer to your adult children and help guide them on the path to more faithful and meaningful lives.
You can get our latest book and all of our other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
It's Wednesday, June 29th. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for my dear friend Teresa Tamio here. Claire Caldwell is an abortion survivor whose twin was killed in the womb. She's here to share her story. Tell us her reaction to the Supreme Court justice decision on the Dobbs case on Friday. And to talk with us about the Daily Wire documentary called Choosing Death, The Legacy of Roe. Claire, thank you so much for joining us here on Catholic Connection.
Thank you so much for having me.
So where were you, Claire, when you heard the announcement of the Supreme Court decision on Friday?
I was actually at the beach with my entire family, my husband, our children, my parents, my sister, and her family, and I laughed because we kept thinking it would happen. You know, we've been watching as the Supreme Court has released opinions every, I think, Monday and Wednesday for the past few weeks, and of course it happens while I'm at the beach with my family, but it was really fitting because this has been a journey for all of us. As I have stepped out the past 12 years and shared my survival story, how I've been affected by abortion, it's been my family's story. So to celebrate with everyone was pretty special.
So tell us your story, Claire. Share with our listeners here. You are an abortion survivor whose twin was killed in the womb. So share with us that story.
Well, I'm adopted. My sister and I are actually both adopted, and my sister had met her birth mother, and I thought, I would love to meet my birth mother. I feel like it will go the same way. We'll have this great connection. I'll figure out who I look like and who I act like. And so when I was 20, I decided I wanted to meet my birth mother. And so I started that process, and we ended up meeting just a few days after I turned 21. And we had this great first reunion. And then a couple months later, I went to visit her in Oklahoma where she lives. Her name is Tanya. We had connected like I thought we would. We looked like each other, like I hoped we would. But when I went to visit her, something changed, because I gave her this card and a ring with my, a card that said, "Thank you for choosing life for me," and then a ring and a necklace with my birthstone on it. And I thanked her for my life. And she broke down into tears. And she said, "Claire, I didn't. I'm so sorry. I didn't. Your life is a miracle." And she went on to tell me about being pregnant with me at 13 years old, and that I had survived her abortion that successfully aborted my twin, and that I was a twin abortion survivor. And up until this point, I grew up in a Christian home. I knew that having a family was a gift, that adoption was a gift, but I had never thought about abortion. And so in that moment, I realized that I was the type of person who'd been affected by abortion, and that my birth mother was the type of woman that was desperately looking for someone to walk alongside her and tell her that she's worthy, that that someone will walk alongside her and help her to be a mother. Those are things that she desperately wanted that didn't happen for her. And so it opened up my eyes to this whole new world of, oh my gosh, people like you and me have been impacted by abortion in so many different ways, and we don't even realize it. And so that happened 12 years ago, and I decided to share my story, and it has humanized the unborn child and helps people empathize with the woman like my birth mother, and it's been an incredible journey.
So when you tell your story to other people, you know, what is usually the reaction when you're out speaking about this story, and what do people come and talk? Because usually people, when you give a talk, they'll come and talk to you. What do people say to you? What's been the reaction over the years?
Yeah, there are a lot of different reactions that I get from people. Of course, I do upset a lot of people. A lot of people don't want to recognize my story because it does expose the humanity of the unborn child. And, and so a lot of people want to dismiss it. But when I speak to groups that, you know, generally agree with me, that are there to support an organization that I might be speaking on behalf of, I have two responses. One is, you know, I had an abortion. I had an abortion 20 years ago. I haven't told anyone about this, but your forgiveness for your birth mother, Claire, it helped me realize that maybe my child would forgive me too. Maybe God could forgive me too if he forgives your birth mother like you say he does. And so that's always such an encouraging response as women begin their healing journey, men too, and family members of people who've had abortions, they can begin their healing journey as they connect to pieces of my story and my birth mother and my family's healing journey. And so that's been really encouraging. And then the second response that I hear so often is that your story really makes this real, because when I see you, when I hear you, when I hear your story, I realize that I'm looking at the aborted child. I'm hearing the story of the aborted child. And so it humanizes this issue for me. And so that's been really impactful too, because, you know, so often we can't humanize that unborn baby, but through the abortion survivor and through medical technology, ultrasound technology, we can actually humanize that unborn baby.
Mm-hmm. So, Claire, how do you see your story playing out now we're post the Roe v. Wade era? Now that we're, you know, Roe v. Wade is gone, how do you see your story playing out moving forward?
Well, this just is giving the decision back to the states, which I think is something we can absolutely celebrate. You know, there's multiple states that will be abortion-free right away or within 30 days of this decision that just happened. And so There's a lot to celebrate, but there's a lot to do moving forward. You know, there are multiple states that still have very lenient abortion laws. There's still a lot of work to do, but I think as I celebrated with my family the other day, I just kept thinking, you know, yes, we should celebrate. This is absolutely wonderful. But this is when our work truly begins, because this is when we get to, you know, kind of practice what we preach. We get to walk alongside women. We get to support our local pregnancy resource centers and adoption agencies and education movements and maternity homes, that we get to partner with organizations and people that are actually helping women be able to continue their pregnancies, to parent, to place for adoption, whatever it looks like, in order to choose life for their child and to be able to be parents.
Claire, we got to take a break. We're going to continue with you and talk about the documentary by the Daily Wire, Choosing Death, The Legacy of Roe. Stay with us, everyone. We've been talking with Claire Caldwell, abortion survivor whose twin was killed in the womb. She's sharing her story with us, and she's part of a new documentary by the Daily Wire called Choosing Death, The Legacy of Roe. Claire, how did you get involved in this documentary?
Well, the Daily Wire reached out to me. They were looking for a personal story of someone who had been affected by abortion, and they came across my story. Found out that I had actually survived an abortion procedure and thought it would fit in well, because the documentary is looking at, like I said, the legacy of Roe, where we have come since Roe v. Wade happened, all of the medical advances that have happened, the science and the technology advances that have happened, and the many stories that have come out from inside abortion facilities, from abortionists themselves, and from those who have studied this over the past 50 years. And so they used my story as kind of an example of, this is the humanity of the unborn child. This is what's happening when we're championing for safe and legal abortion. You know, this is how abortion hurts women and takes the life of children like me. And so it was an honor to be a part of it. I think it's one of the most powerful documentaries I have ever seen. I personally learned so much watching it, and I would encourage anyone that can to watch it. It's free now, actually, on Daily Wire.
Oh, okay. So anybody can go and watch it. I watched the trailer. And the trailer was really good. I'm going to go watch the documentary, and it's great information. It's, you know, Claire, we talk about this all the time here on Catholic Connection and on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio, is that if people really understood what abortion is, they wouldn't support. So many people don't know what exactly Roe what Roe gave us, you know, abortion on demand up until birth. I mean, they don't even understand what's being what's legalized in some state levels. And so when you watch the documentary, your eyes are really open.
Yes, they are. I've noticed that even since the overturning of Roe, that people, their talking points that are supporting abortion, that are supporting or speaking out against the overturning of Roe v. Wade, they really aren't educated on what they're advocating for. And what they're advocating for is exactly what happened to my twin in the womb, which is dismemberment. And it's horrific, and people need to know what they're supporting before they speak out about it.
Yeah, you make a really good point, and I knew when the decision came down on Friday, Claire, I was on the air filling in for Teresa, and I got off the air, and I knew right away when I saw that, I thought, I'm going to limit my social media consumption over the next few days, because I know it's going to get really ugly. And even the stuff that I did see, there was so much misinformation. Oh, you're going to get charged if you have a miscarriage and have a DNC.
Right.
You're going to get charged if you have an ectopic pregnancy. It's none of that is true. And then they don't talk about the dismemberment of a baby in a womb and able to abort a baby in a partial birth abortion. I mean, none of that's talked about, but all this misinformation out there of what this means is all over social media. And it really gets mind-boggling. That's why this documentary is so important, and people like you are so valuable because you're out there sharing truth. And sometimes we just need to have these conversations one-on-one with our family and friends as we approach holiday seasons like 4th of July. We have to know what we're talking about.
Yeah, right. I think you're exactly right.
So, you know, maybe watch the documentary, Claire. Maybe the suggestion is for people to watch the documentary before they go into having these barbecues, because we know with this decision, you're going to go into 4th of July, and these conversations are going to come up, and a lot of families are divided on this issue of abortion.
Yeah, I think it is very educational. Like I said, I learned a lot just from watching it. It helped me know how to respond in certain ways when people bring up these difficult circumstances, you know, like life of the mother and rape or whatever. It helps me understand, you know, the humanity of the unborn isn't based on circumstances. We can empathize, we can care, but here's how we can respond in a gentle but firm way, and really, really respond in a beneficial way for both parties involved in that conversation. And so, yeah, I think we're living in a time where we can't get around these topics. It's coming up at our family functions. It's coming up when we turn on the TV, wherever we go. These are conversations that, unfortunately, you know, we need to be having in our homes with our children even. And so it's a very helpful documentary that will give you those talking points, the tools that you need to move forward in a country where we just can't get around these topics.
Do you see yourself doing more, doing talks, Claire, or going around sharing your testimony, your story, and what you shared in this documentary with other audiences of people listening and want to hear your story? Would you be available to give talks, or how does that work?
Yes, I do share my story. I do about 30 to 40 speaking events per year, and okay. I am with Ambassador Speakers Bureau, and so people can call them to book me as a speaker. My favorite thing is to speak for on behalf of pregnancy resource centers, adoption agencies, organizations that are actually going to be paving the way, moving forward, and walking alongside women, doing the very thing that the pro-abortion side says that we don't do, which is care for the mother, care for the baby after they're born as well. And so they can reach out to Ambassador if they'd like to inquire about booking me.
That's great. Claire Caldwell is who we're talking to today. She is an abortion survivor whose twin was killed in the womb. She has been sharing her story with us. She is a speaker that travels giving her testimony and sharing her story. She's part of a new documentary by the Daily Wire called Choosing Death, A Legacy of Roe is now free on the Daily Wire. You can go watch it, share with your friends and family. And Claire, I'm a big proponent in sharing interviews such as this with other people, with your friends and family on social media platforms in a way to share truth, because sometimes people do get, you know, they don't know how to articulate it or communicate with your friends and family, but this is a great resource to say, hey, there was an interview with Claire Caldwell. I think you should listen to it. Or is there a documentary out there? You should watch it. You know, I may not be able to best explain it, but there's information out there. What else do you want to share with our listeners here, Claire, before we let you go? We got about a minute or so left with you here on Catholic Connection.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been such a gift to be able to share about the documentary and about my story. I would just encourage anyone who's listening to, you know, be in prayer about this every single day. Pray for our Supreme Court justices who, did such an incredible thing by overturning Roe v. Wade. Pray for our local pregnancy resource centers and adoption agencies. You know, they are under attack right now. For your pro-life leaders, we as well have been under attack as well. And I would just encourage anyone who's listening, you know, not only to be in prayer, but not to be afraid to speak the truth.
Mm. Amen. Claire Caldwell, thank you so much. Don't be afraid to speak the truth. The Daily Wire, Choosing Death, A Legacy of Roe, is a documentary. Go watch it, share with your friends and family, and stay with us, everyone. We'll be back with Joan Lewis here on Catholic Connection. Filling in for Teresa Tomeo here on Catholic Connection. As always, Joan Lewis joins Catholic Connection on Wednesday from Joan's Rome. Joan, how are you today?
Well, trying to stay cool. It's been in the three digits for a couple of days here, and my computer screen tells me it's only 92 now, but, you know, that's probably in the shade. So,
is it humid in Italy? Is it humid heat? Okay.
What I saw today, we said 46%. So, that's got to be pretty high. That's really got to be the worst part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you walk outside, you've walked two blocks down, and you feel like you've just gotten out of a swimming pool, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
And not that many places are air-conditioned as they would be in the U.S. And you get into your... from your air-conditioned home to your air-conditioned car to the air-conditioned supermarket, et cetera. And you know, not much of your life on a hot day will be outside. Although I have to say, I don't know how the tourists do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they're on a bus at 8 in the morning, and then that'll probably be air-conditioned. Then you've got to walk in the Roman Forum or all these places. You know Rome, all these places that are literally outside. Well, you get to the point where you're really happy to go inside a church.
Yeah.
Because churches are generally, not that they're air-conditioned, they're just going to be cooler. They have walls that are, you know, many feet thick. So, but I think the bad part here is that part of each of these last few days has been what looks like a cloud cover, and it isn't the clouds. We're in a very bad drought situation in the first place, and you can even see this by walking over to the Tiber River, how low the river is. Plants that you would never ever see, maybe except every couple of years, are now, you know, you can see. Anyway, the drought situation, but then the fires. Many more fires than usual. Mm-hmm. There was a big one just outside of Rome in a gypsy camp, like a couple of days ago. And so much of what is covering the sky and people think is cloud cover is from these fires.
Oh,
and
wow.
That doesn't make breathing any easier. And,
yeah.
And if you have asthma, I mean, I've had asthma in the past, and if you have asthma, there's every reason in the world to stay inside.
Yeah.
So, you know. And you could see this morning at the Mass, the Papal Mass, for the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul, which is a huge holiday, not just in the Vatican, but in the city of Rome, because Peter and Paul are the patron saints of Rome. But you could see how hot people were today. And my heart just bled. I mean, looking at the bishops, the cardinals, anybody wearing vestments had to be, because there's no, yes, the basilica will be cooler than outside, but there is no AC, you know, no air conditioning.
Yeah.
Inside, so you could see how some people were visibly suffering. But it was a very interesting ceremony from the past. I mean, I have either attended or watched a whole bunch of these ceremonies, that on the 29th of June, the Holy Father Francis has changed the rite a bit. And so in the past, the palliums were blessed and handed on to the new archbishops by the Pope himself, put on their shoulders, that is to say. And Pope Francis changed that rite so that the palliums, which were brought on trays to the Pope this morning and then blessed, they were taken somewhere behind the scenes, because as each of the 32 new, there were 44 new archbishops, metropolitan archbishops, named in the last year. 32 of those were in the Basilica this morning. When it actually came time for them to be given the blessed pallium, they were in a little kind of a gift wrap box. And so that part of the ceremony, that takes place right away in the morning. But what was most interesting was the fact that the Holy Father, he presided. He didn't have a chasuble on, but he did have a red cape, and he presided at the word of the liturgy. So he said what a priest would say at the word of the liturgy, and then there were obviously the first reading, the second reading, the responsorial psalm between the two, and then the gospel, which were done, you know, by assigned people. And then the actual Eucharistic prayer part of the Mass was Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re. But the Pope was seated. If you're looking at the main papal altar, you're standing in the aisle of the Basilica, and to your right is a massive number of archbishops, and to your left a massive number of cardinals. Just to the right of them, kind of close to the altar, maybe, you know, 15, 20 feet away, was where the Pope was seated in an armchair. And the statue of St. Peter, which is wearing vestments and a triple tiara and a papal ring twice a year, this is one of those feast days when the statue of St. Peter is all decorated, not decorated, but wearing vestments. And the other day is February 22nd, the Feast of the Chair of Peter. So so it was interesting to see the Mass divided as to presiders, the Pope for the liturgy of the word and then Cardinal Re for the, you know, for the Eucharistic ceremony. So, and then the interesting thing is, of course, the Pope, the Vatican television, so when you watch it on EWTN, you're watching the Vatican television's film. They never really show the arrival or departure of the Pope. Because obviously for the past almost 2 months, he's, you know, been getting about a wheelchair, but he's been shown to walk in recent days. And of course, the big story of the day, wouldn't you know it, as the media saw it, was the fact that Nancy Pelosi, who is in town with her husband, and I don't know, other members of her family on some kind of a vacation, she was at the papal mass, and of course, all of the Vaticanisti, the reporters covering the Vatican, did she or did she not get communion? And she did, but the Pope never, Pope Francis never gives out communion. So it'll be the priest whose entire task at Mass is, you know, communicating the faithful. So, so she was there with her husband, and then obviously the Gingriches are in town on a holiday, and obviously Callista Gingrich, and until Joe Biden became president, she was the U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. So a very interesting morning for sure, and doubly interesting because a new document came out from the Vatican today, a new papal document on the liturgy, and it's called Desiderio Desideravi, and it's actually from a sentence. The English of that Latin would be, I have eagerly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer.
Joan, I want to take a break real quick. I want to talk about that the liturgy, the document on the liturgy after the break. So stay with us. We got to take a quick break with Joan Lewis here on Catholic Connection, and we'll talk about the papal document and the liturgy right after this.
When a kid loses a tooth, it's exciting. But an adult has some serious decisions that needs a caring, faithful, and family-oriented dentist like Dr. Maddie with Advanced Dentistry Center. Here's what Dr. Maddie says to those that are deciding between bridges and implants.
While bridges only last 8 to 10 years and damage adjacent teeth, implants last up to 30 years and help prevent bone loss. Plus, they look more natural.
Extremely natural, with Dr. Maddie, who practices the art of dentistry at Advanced Dentistry Center. Conveniently located at 13 Mile and Telegraph, make the decision to call 248-594-9592 or click AdvancedDentistryCenter.com. Mention Ave Maria and receive 10% off dental implants. Be comfortable knowing that Advanced Dentistry Center's goal is to provide you with the most up-to-date treatments to help you look and feel your best. That's 248-594-9592.
Those who deny the full humanity of the preborn will be toying with the sentiments of pro-life people. They will say, you can't really believe in the humanity of the unborn unless you support this or that piece of legislation. The pro-life position is quite different. We might well believe that we need to improve social conditions, but first of all, we believe that the preborn are a good to be protected. even if born into poverty, even if born into unstable, violent homes. We want to eliminate those terrible conditions, but it is the height of arrogance to tell human beings like unborn children who cannot communicate or reason or stand up for themselves that they are better off dead, because we know from our own experience that we would choose life and survival over death, no matter how poor our social environment.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Ave Maria Radio and the Ave Maria Radio app.
We're talking with Joan Lewis from Joan's Room, as we always do here on Catholic Connection on Wednesdays. And Joan, you mentioned Nancy Pelosi taking communion. It was one of the first articles I read this morning, as people upset that she took communion in the Vatican while her visit there. And, you know, to the defense of the priest, he might not have known who she was. We don't know really what was going on there, even though Corleone, her bishop, said that she should not be taking communion.
Well, you know, at this point, we do not know. The Vatican has not issued a statement. The Pelosi's didn't, the embassy didn't. So we can only presume that there's a certain number of priests assigned to give communion in the basilica or in the square, and then there's a greater number of priests during a papal mass. Pope himself never does give communion, and I think that's actually a very wise reason. Today would be an example. But we can only presume that a priest does not know who she was, or if all of a sudden he's handing communion out to the faithful, because she was in the diplomatic corps area, if he's handing, you know, giving communion out to the faithful and she presents herself, the bigger story would have been that a priest, you know, refused it, had he known who she was. So we don't know if that priest knew who she was, what kind of a decision was. So I think we have to err on the side of a priest did not know. But it's kind of a shame that at the papal mass, the big headline should be Nancy Pelosi in communion instead of all the new archbishops, or even the fact that this new document came out today, papal document, you know, on the liturgy. But, you know, the saying in journalism is, if it bleeds, it leads. So
yeah, unfortunately.
A Nancy Pelosi communion is going to be more important to a lot of people than a new papal document on the liturgy. So,
yeah.
In any event, it was a beautiful ceremony. I guess as a Catholic, we have to be happy she was there, but I'll let, you know, the rest of it has to go unsaid because we don't know what
happened. And pray, you know, I just call to pray for her and her conversion and her
issue. Oh, I do every day.
That's what we're called to do as Christians. Let's pray for her. Joan Lewis, we're also talking with you about the liturgy, the document, papal document on the liturgy. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, this is so interesting because we know that it was a year ago that the Pope had the Traditionis Custodes, a document in which he came as close as possible to banning the Latin Mass, the traditional Latin TLM Mass form, and promoting obviously only that which Paul VI and John Paul II promoted after Vatican Council II. But just there's been so much pushback. And in May, as a matter of fact, Pope Francis, and this is by way of background to today's document as well, in May, the Pope spoke to the faculty and students of the Pontifical Liturgical Institute in Rome. It's one of the most foremost in the Catholic Church. And he kind of accused those who were resisting his restrictions on the Latin Mass as sowers of division in the church, even diabolical. And he said, this is back in May, when liturgical life is something of a banner of division, there's the odor of the devil, the deceiver. So what I'm saying is, the Holy Father knows, he indicated then, that there has been a lot of pushback on his document of a year ago, you know, making the use almost impossible of the TLM. So today's document came out. It didn't say anything further about allowing or not allowing the traditional Latin Mass. What the Pope wanted it to be was almost a poem on the profound meaning, of Eucharistic celebrations, as that meaning was supposed to have come from the council. And he wanted to encourage liturgical formation, talking a great deal about the sacraments, the sacrament of life, obviously the Mass, the Eucharistic celebration above all. And what I found kind of interesting, I mapped out a whole bunch of paragraphs that for me in reading this 65-paragraph document, I thought it was very interesting because he talks about the beauty of the Mass and the beautiful points that he makes, which should be in a Mass. These are the points. These are the things, the reverence, the beauty, the piety, the prayerfulness, the silence that are seen in the TLM Masses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issues that he decries, and he uses a very strong language talking about the opposition of a in opposition terms of the well-prepared priest saying Mass and then those who are saying Mass to, you know, put themselves on the pedestal and be the most important thing. And so I found out that the issues that he decries as being bad, those are the issues we only see in the Novus Ordo, in the modern, you know, Masses, the post-Vatican Council II Masses. That's where you might have... I saw a video recently, this almost makes me too sick to tell you, of a priest with a clown costume on distributing First Communion. I actually remember where that was, but if I had to, I could find it, you know, probably in 10, 15 minutes on Facebook. There have been so many abuses, and those of us who love the Mass, whatever its form, and love the sacredness of the Mass and the Eucharistic sacrifice being the gift every day at Mass that the Lord gives us of his sacrifice on the cross. So for those of us who love the Mass, when there is abuse, it's very, very disheartening. But you don't hear too much about abuses like he was talking about, you know, in the TLM. So I just found that an interesting point. I tried to read the whole document well, but kind of quickly, simply so that we could talk about it on the phone.
Yeah, Joan, we have 30 seconds left with you before we let you go.
Yeah. Well, basically, no, it's a very important day here in Rome, and, you know, some stores are closed, others aren't, but it's a big feast day for the church, and obviously we mustn't forget that St. Paul's Outside the Walls is the other basilica in Rome that... by the way, Cardinal James Harvey, our American cardinal, was present today at the ceremony.
All right, Joan, we got to let you go. Sorry, we got to wrap it up.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.